The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
World Cup Football Daily, day 6 in Fortaleza. Yes, we Mexican, as Brazil failed to thrill and end 0-0, let down by lack of creativity, especially from the referee. Elsewhere, Belgium, Algeria, Desert Foxes try and steal it, but get hit with a felony. We review and preview the Wednesday action. Hey, there's Spain, Chile, that looks big. Australia, Netherlands, yeah, and Cameroon, Croatia. It's all coming up in this Football Daily. Yeah, the legal department just went on. It's World Cup Football Daily, and what a day of World Cup football this has been. Well, it's been one, hasn't it? I love the atmosphere here as we're... I have to say, actually, we've cut the corners a little bit here, and we're actually watching the final game on Tuesday, as it happens. Russia-Korea going on there in the background.
Gripping stuff.
Yeah, it is gripping. So far, goalless, viewers, but we'll keep you up to date on that developments there as it happens. Where's this game being played, James?
In Brazil.
All right, this is day 6. Just imagine what day 12 is going to sound like. James Horncastle's here anyway, as is Greg Ruffley. Oh, Greg Bukowski.
Oh, hey, yes. Hi,
yeah.
James.
Yeah. Now, right, well, okay, well, hey. Ooh, I thought they were going to score for a second. But while all that's going on in the background, we have time to have a little look back on the events of this Tuesday. And not altogether satisfactory day, I would suspect, for one or two of the teams, particularly the hosts. Brazil. But let's start, shall we, by saying well done to Herrero side Mexico.
Yes, I thought they were really really good against Brazil. I thought he got his game plan was spot on. Three-man defence, well marshalled by Rafael Marquez, who I thought was really cool, you know, using all his experience at the back there. Very hard-working midfield, who made very difficult for... I think the midfield actually controlled the game, ultimately. And I think Brazil, when they threatened, they seemed to threaten in these kind of sporadic waves of emotion, it seemed like, almost, rather than any great thought that went into their play. And Mexico were thoroughly deserved the point, and just lacking a striker, really.
Are they the biggest surprise of this tournament so far, given the way that they qualified, the playoff with New Zealand and that?
I don't think so.
No? Well, who's the biggest surprise then, Greg?
Well, they had a lot of 0-0s in the playoffs, and I know they struggled, but they drawn 0-0 and they only won the first game 1-0. Could have been 3-0, obviously, with those chalked off goals for Dos Santos. But
yeah, well, that's part of the whole surprise of it for me.
But yeah, partly. But I didn't really feel in the match against Brazil at any point that they were actually going to score, even for all that the good play. They just lacked some kind of physical presence up front, and this is the problem that they've had for a long time. It's probably why they took Blanco in 2010 at the age of 37 and about 15 stone.
They've certainly got a physical presence at the back, though, haven't they? Between the sticks, Ochoa.
Yeah, no, I think it was one of the performances of the tournament from him. His save from a couple of saves from Neymar, but particularly the first one, which led to Gordon Banks trending in Brazil. I don't think it was necessarily a Banks-like save. It was certainly good. And obviously Ochoa is either out of contract or about to be out of contract. So playing for one, I think there'll be a lot of...
I suspect he's about to be in contract, actually, after that. But as you say, he was in Ajaccio, who were absolutely rubbish last season in Ligue 1 and are going to be in Ligue 2 as a result.
He's a huge season. Figure in Mexico. I mean, when they signed him... I think it was coming off of the back of a failed drugs test for clenbuterol, which I think Alberto Contador, the Tour de France cyclist, got. And he left, I don't know whether he left Mexico because of that, whilst it was still being disputed. I think he was later cleared of it. But Ajaccio signed him on kind of opportunistically. And I don't think they really knew what they'd signed, because he is, in terms of personality in Mexico, as huge, not as huge as David Beckham, but one of those big... Yeah, so all of a sudden, Ajaccio's kind of small business kind of kit manufacturer had, you know, hundreds of thousands of orders for his kit. Their website crashed under the traffic because he's such a... He does strike you as this kind of almost like manga, kind of Holly and Benji kind of goalkeeper. I think it's all manga anime kind of goalkeeper, doesn't he, in terms of, or is this like another Jedi mind trick?
No. I'm imagining all these football clubs' marketing departments going crazy now, just thinking, oh, hello.
Yeah.
Get involved in that.
He has a great kind of eccentric haircut as well, with the kind of McEnroe headband and the frizz, which in that heat and humidity, you can imagine just
expanding. Yeah, brilliant. Hey, Julian Laurent tweeting in, so, Honigstein, Jimbo, James Horncastle, are you still saying that Ligue 1 goalkeepers are rubbish? Hashtag Ochoa. And loads of other people adding in, yeah, because look at the other ones. Enyama has done well, Sirigu.
Loris. They've all kept, well, apart from
Sirigu.
He's
no longer in Ligue 1.
No, but, I mean, you could say that they've all kept, well, apart from Sirigu, they've all kept clean sheets. But, yeah, come on.
Anyway, Mexico doing terrific then, so...
Tiki-taka football.
Tiki-taka, very nice. Brazil, got a little epithet for them?
It's not toda joia, toda beleza, is it?
No, it's not.
Disappointing, you know, after going behind against Croatia and requiring a fortuitous penalty from the honorary Brazilian referee Nishimura. They've let down, I think, after coping with the pressure in the Confederations Cup last year, putting some great performances against Italy and beating Brazil in the final, and Fred being good in that tournament, scored five goals, was top scorer, and he, you know, apart from winning that penalty against Croatia, a lot of people again sort of questioning what else he did in that match and in this match. I mean, prior to that, the sort of explanation was he does a lot of off-the-ball sort of work and running, which kind of helps Neymar express himself better. But he hardly moved tonight.
I mean, I think he touched the ball 16 times, gave it away 8 times. Mm. No lateral movement whatsoever. So when Neymar was doing these kind of, you know, these scampering runs forward as he does, he's not got a centre-forward to play off. So he just ended up getting crowded out half the time. And it did seem that, you know, without Oscar having an influence on the game like he did in the first one, that they were just looking to give the ball to Neymar all the time, and he had one idea, which was to run forwards into a brick wall of a Mexico defence, and then they'd come out with the ball. And not till Joe came on and actually stretched his legs, and not that he's the most mobile of forwards, did Brazil start to kind of look like they could be dangerous.
Thiago Silva looked good on a more positive note.
Could have been sent off.
Couldn't he?
Yeah,
that was a thunderous challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we look at Pepe, what got him a red card yesterday, kind of leaning into Thomas Muller. I mean, Pepe's an idiot anyway. He should have got sent off for what he did. But, I mean, that was a challenge that probably merited a red. And obviously, Thiago Silva being Brazil's captain, I mean, the loss of him at that stage would have been huge.
Well, post-game, Scolari saying it wasn't the result we wanted, but he called their performance overall an improvement.
It wasn't an improvement at all. I mean, you'd think now in the second game of this tournament, which they've been building up to for a long time, that they'd at least be moving through the gears now, and they're still kind of looking for the keys, and they've not really got going. So, I actually don't know what Brazil's game plan is. And I know perhaps you could say Brazil over the years have played a lot of kind of free jazz football, and, you know, it's kind of, that's the way they play, it's slow, 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 and then they'll just, you know, accelerate off and do something magical. But I'd have thought a manager such as Scolari would be a little bit, you know, he'd have something else beyond that kind of ethos to draw on. And at this moment in time, I can't see what it is, because they don't, you know, they could put Joe in instead of Fred in the next game, and perhaps Willie in as well, but I don't really know. That midfield particularly doesn't look like there's enough players there who can control it. I mean, they play Cameroon in the next game. I'm sure they'll go through to the last 16, but at that point, when they meet a better team who's got some idea of how to keep the ball in midfield, they're going to really struggle, and they have already struggled.
Well, it leaves the group wide open-ish, and certainly a chance for Croatia to roar back into contention when they take on Cameroon in their second match on Wednesday. Now, that's going to be in Manaus, raising the spectre of hallucinations for their players, as Marquinhos complained after Italy's game with England. So hot and humid he was hallucinating. He never specified what he thought he saw. One can only surmise. But anyway, that's where they're going to be playing. No Samietto. He's got a knee injury. And that's a big blow, of course, for Cameroon. Cameroon lost to Mexico. Could have been by loads, but wasn't. Croatia, in the meantime, have been caught naked swimming.
Yeah, skinny dipping.
Mm. Mm.
They've called a media silence, I think, on that.
Certainly have. Very upset about it.
Mm.
Well,
Will they have their pants taken down, do you think, by Cameroon?
Their defence overexposed.
Hey. Mandzukic is back. He was suspended for the game against Brazil.
Yeah, that's gonna help them. I thought they were good against Brazil, and you know, worthy of a point really. And I can see them. Their style of football will work in Manaus, I think, because you need to try and reserve what energy you can. And it's no surprise that Italy, who had held possession better than England, were the team who advanced. And I can see Croatia being, you know, the team that has most of the ball and basically has more left at the end of the game and probably nicks it 1-0 or 2-0.
Hmm?
I think losing Eto'o might help Cameroon because, I mean, he's such a big figure. I know that in the past they've kind of ignored and not passed to him. But, yeah, essentially you're playing with 10 men if that's the case. Whereas they do have two decent goal-getters in Choupo-Moting from the Bundesliga and Aboubakar from Ligue 1. So maybe if they just focus on getting the ball into them, they might have a better chance. But I pick Croatia. I think Croatia will win.
That's coming up then on Wednesday. Now, meantime, on Tuesday, Belgium, we got our first look at them in their clash with Algeria. A bit underwhelming, this one. Our man Owen Gibson was there in Minas Gerais to see this one, and here he is now. Hi, Owen Gibson.
Hello there.
Hello. How's Belo Horizonte?
Belo Horizonte is remarkably well organised for the Brazilian World Cup host city, actually. I'm quite impressed.
All right, and you're in the back of a cab heading back home at present after witnessing, excuse me, the debut of the Rouge Devils in this tournament. How was it for you, Owen?
Well, they didn't exactly tear up any trees in the first half. In fact, you know, by half time we thought we might be seeing one of the shocks of this first round of games, because as you say, they have been endlessly hyped, almost to the point of cliche, as dark horses or whatever you want to call them. And they looked sort of nervous, ponderous. You know, the team that he sent out seemed a bit, to me, to be lacking in incisiveness, really. I mean, he played Dembele, Chadli and Witzel in the middle rather than any of the sort of more progressive players like Mertens or Morales from Everton. And I think it sort of all got a bit bogged down. And then Algeria got their goal, and you wondered a bit how they were going to get back into it. But of course, get back into it, they did. And it was down to sort of Marouane Fellaini, who, you know, has had a miserable season, but played very well when he came on. Looked more like the man who used to trouble defences at Everton than the sort of sad shadow that used to skulk around at Old Trafford.
Mm. Redemption on a world stage then for Marouane. What about Wilmots then? That was one of the question marks over Belgium, the lack of experience perhaps from their manager. And do you think he'll have drawn valuable lessons, and what would they be?
I think he will. I mean, it's almost like they've got too many options in that midfield area. He kind of felt to me like he'd almost overthought it. I mean, he played De Bruyne out on the wing when De Bruyne's been playing more sort of number 10 in some of the warm-up games. He really sort of shuffled his pack at De Bruyne a bit afterwards. It was a bit of a surprise that he was shoved out onto the wing. The main thing is that they won the game, and, you know, they've got those 3 points on the board. I think there was probably a bit of nervousness. It was their first World Cup game for almost all of those players, apart from Van Boyten. So I suppose that they should get one out of the way and on to the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting you mentioned the Belgian media there. So much talk about their chances in this tournament. What was their take on it all?
Well, I think it was disappointed, actually. I mean, the tone of the questioning was almost akin to an England press conference, in that, you know, they were focusing on the negative rather than the positive. I mean, they were unimpressed with Lukaku, who's obviously come in for the injured Benteke at the sort of point of the attack. And I think Benteke obviously works better in that system. He kind of maybe holds the ball up a little bit better than Lukaku does. And, you know, they broadly didn't seem very, very happy. And I suspect they'll be asking for changes for the next game. It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, Fellaini keeps his place and they go with a bit more of a sort of direct style with out and out wingers rather than having Hazard and De Bruyne on the wings, who tended to cut inside a lot more.
Mm. Did you see the reaction from the Algerian journalists at all, Owen?
Well, the Algerians were cross as well. Everyone was a bit cross afterwards, basically. I mean, the Algerians thought that they kind of had it in the bag, and I think they feel like they've been underrated themselves in the run-up to this tournament. I mean, kind of the unmentioned dark horses almost beat the overhyped dark horses, because they are the highest-ranked African nation in the in the World Cup. They've got some good young players. They're not quite the sort of ultra-defensive Algeria of old, although, you know, after they got their goal, they did basically just park the bus and hope to get away with it. I think the Algerian coach called him right afterwards, where he said that basically they just tired and were worn down and weren't adventurous enough after they got their goal. So I think everyone was a bit dissatisfied by the end, but it was Belgium that had the 3 points.
All right, well, onwards and upwards. Where are you off to next time?
I'm just about to get a plane to Sao Paulo, where I'll be going to watch Uruguay train tomorrow, and more England back into the England circus ahead of the crunch match on Thursday.
Wow, and what a match it looks set to be. All right, I mean, we look forward to catching up with you then.
Thanks ever so much.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Owen Gibson there, who sounds like he's having a terrific time. Dublin Dilettante says, did anyone see the linesman forcing Mark Wilmots to put on his assistant's jacket during Belgium-Algeria like a doorman in a snooty wine bar? Did you see this, James?
I did, yeah.
What was the issue there?
Well, he was wearing this very bright white shirt, which I think the fourth official thought was clashing with Algeria's white shirts.
Even though he wasn't on the field of play?
Yeah, even though he's a kind of big, portly guy with suit trousers on. He couldn't believe it when he was instructed, well, the physio was, his assistant was instructed to give him his jacket.
No way.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy. All right, well, in other news, somebody made a graph, says Roasty, of which nation is best represented at the World Cup. And this is something we were talking about yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. The French have apparently 16 extra players, apart from the ones they've got in their 23-man squad, who you could, by virtue of being born in France, call French. Lucas W., though, says no, it's Germany. He has 23 in their squad, and then another 18 players who could qualify.
Or born in Berlin, you see.
Yeah, well, that's But it's funny, but you mentioned that Berlin thing, but Araiga, too, did a bit of research into the cities thing. He's got Paris as having the most, way more than Berlin. Mm. Right. Mm. Returning to Wednesday's action, and Australia-Netherlands, new expectations about the Dutch there after their terrific performance against Spain. Is it going to be second match syndrome for them or Australia? This looks like a tough game for Matt Ryan there between the posts.
Yeah, I imagine it'll be another heroic defeat for Australia, who they've got that same kind of feeling around them as the USA in that they'll put all this hard work in, and they've got a limited squad, they're not as talented. They make up for it with.
Are you being a bit harsh about the USA? Do you think?
No, not at all. I think most listeners wouldn't say that USA team is full of stars. But it's just this kind of, they've got this good kind of team ethic, and they managed to bridge the gap between the more talented teams that they face, and I can imagine maybe Australia will lose 2-1, 2-0, which would be much better. Oh, much better than Spain did.
But that's certainly true.
They're not going to go out there and have a go. And Tim Cahill will probably do his incredible jumping man thing, and maybe bother the crossbar at one point. There you go. That's what's going to happen. Tim Cahill will hit the crossbar. Australia will lose 2-0. They'll sweat a lot along the way, and the Dutch will, probably cruise through it.
Greg, seeing a frustrating afternoon for the Orangi. What do you think?
Well, despite some of his players saying don't change a winning team and a winning system, it looks like Louis van Gaal is going to do exactly that, because Australia play in a different way to Spain. Obviously, Spain dominate the ball, so I think the Netherlands in that game looked to counter-attack and be more direct. In this game, they expect to have more of the ball, so I think they're going to switch from a 5-3-2 to a 4-3-3. So it'll be interesting to see whether that change, although they did play that system in qualifying, disrupts some of the rhythm that they found in the Spain game, or some of the sort of chemistry that they discovered. I still think they will be comfortable.
They'll destroy Australia, surely.
Well, with all due respect to Australia, though, isn't it?
I mean, it looked like Chile were going to do that to Australia, and they somehow managed to dig in, and you could argue, Netherlands are probably a better side, but I think Australia showed the kind of gumption that you need to in these competitions to make it difficult for better teams.
No? I mean, you never know with the Dutch, because, in year 2008, they blew away France and Italy in the group stages, and then no sooner did they get out of them than they get turfed out themselves. So, you know, I'm not going to get carried away about them.
All right, James. Now, you mentioned Chile, Greg, and they, of course, are taking on Spain in what looks a very important match indeed. So important, in fact, that we've dialed up Sid Lowe to talk to him about it. Sid Lowe!
Hello, Jimbo.
Yay, he's there. Hey, Sid. Hey, where are you?
I'm in Rio, because, of course, tomorrow, this is where Spain play Chile in what they're all describing as a final, which tends to be the classic cliche that's always used by Spanish footballers for a game that's very important, but you must win. Of course, they must win this one.
Yeah, it's massive, Sid. It's massive. Chile could put Spain out.
Chile could put Spain out. Spain also know, of course, that they could win both of their remaining games. It's possible that it still wouldn't be enough, because Chile could lose to them and then beat Holland. There's a slight suspicion among some fans that it's not only that Chile could beat Holland, but that Holland would somehow allow them to beat them to try and get to Spain. I'm not convinced that that's necessarily the case. In all of this, it was also wrapped up in that idea that even if Spain were to get through, they were going to finish second and therefore face Brazil. I guess with what Brazil had just done, maybe that's not quite so definite anymore.
I hear you, Sid, I hear you. Anyway, Del Bosque's got to think positive. He's got to think about turning things around on the field. Any truth to reports that he's looking to get a big lad up front, put it in the mix to get stuck in?
I wouldn't necessarily call it in the mix to get stuck in. And I don't think the key is that it's a big lad, because bear in mind that Diego Costa is a big lad. But I think what he will want his team to be, I think, a bit more dynamic and a bit more aggressive this time around. He's talked about making changes in the press conference this afternoon. Not only confirmed that he would make changes, although he didn't tell us which changes they would be, but I think implied that there might be a very slight stylistic shift as well. In that he talked about them being a bit more aggressive. He said he made a comment which I thought was quite interesting. He said something along the lines of, you know, we do what we do and we're very good at it. And then he said, but if there are things we have to do that are not habitual enough, then so be it. So I think there will be a slightly more aggressive approach. But I think the other big hint from what he said today was that he believes that part of the problem in the first game was emotional. I don't mean emotional in the sense that everyone was sad, but emotionally that they maybe weren't as tuned in, they weren't as committed as they might have been, that they perhaps didn't play with the intensity and the competitiveness that they had in the past. Because he was asked about the anxiety, and he said, anxiety is not a bad thing so long as you can control it and channel it. Much, much worse would be the opposite. Pasotismo, as they call it in Spanish, in other words, someone who passes up everything, I'm not bothered. And I just thought that was a hint that what he was saying was the problem in the first game. There were actually some players on the pitch who weren't trying that hard.
Right. It's almost like these are big stars who are entering their playing Vegas mode. Especially when you then read about supposedly Xavi signing on for Dan Petrescu's outfit in Qatar, isn't it? It just seems to be a little shift.
Yeah, by the way, is one of the brilliant answers to that quiz about footballers named after TV shows. So anyway, that's another one for another day.
Oh, Pet Rescue, right? Sorry, yeah.
It made me giggle that. Sorry.
No, and rightly so, Sid. But yes, just almost seems like, you know, they've done the business.
Well, I mean, Chadwick is 34, I think, now. This is always going to be his last World Cup. I suppose the question mark was whether or not he had this last World Cup in him. On the face of it, not really a major reason why he wouldn't, although he's had a very difficult season. It, as you say, it does feel like a player who's kind of giving it all up. I think under different circumstances, he would be tempted to stay for maybe one more year at Barcelona. But, of course, it depends what role they have for him. And so far, he hasn't had a proper conversation with Luis Enrique. And from what I've been told, he's not that happy about the fact that he hasn't had a proper conversation with Luis Enrique. So I guess you're right. You know, this is the end of an era. And it's the end of an era for Spain, even if they were to win the World Cup. Because, of course, by definition, and indeed for Barcelona, because by definition, some of the key players move on. And look at Barcelona, the club captains were Puyol, Victor Valdes and Xavi. Well, if this deal for Xavi goes through, it means all three of the club captains will not be there next season.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, Sid, back to the Chile game, and you're talking about slight stylistic tweaks. Anything new in terms of names on the team sheet? Would Pedro be in the starters?
Yeah, I'd be very, very surprised if Pedro wasn't in the starting lineup. I would expect him to play instead of David Silva. I think there might be I would anticipate at least two changes. There might be more. Pedro Inter Silva is one that I think, I wouldn't say clear, but it's one I anticipate. Pedro had started 8 consecutive games before the last one and then didn't start the last one. He scored 20% of Spain's goals since Euro 2012, miles ahead of anyone else. And he just has that, he plays with the intensity and the speed that perhaps was missing the other day, and has a great kind of, it's difficult to put your finger on what it is exactly, but an awareness to be in the right place to score goals. He seems to kind of understand where the ball's going to drop better than others. His movement behind the defence, I think, is better than a lot of other players. So I think he'll start. I think we might see a change at right back. We might see Juanfran for Azpilicueta to try and give him a bit more attacking on that side. It wouldn't amaze me, but it would be very symbolic and very significant for precisely as you've just been talking about, if Koke played ahead of Xavi in midfield. I must admit, I kind of almost suspect that Del Bosque is going to surprise us with the midfield, maybe even change the shape. And I also wouldn't be that surprised if Diego Costa was left out and either Villa or Torres took his place.
All right. OK, and the only other thing is that you were talking about aggression, and these are largely changes to do with the attacking side of things, but defensively was almost the biggest issue of all for Spain. Is there anything he can do about the personnel back there?
Well, there is, and I wouldn't say it was a surprise, because to be honest, I never imagined that he would drop Piqué for the first game. But if you look at the friendlies that they played before the World Cup, Javi Martinez played 90 minutes in all of those games. There was a feeling that Martinez was going to get the chance ahead of Piqué. Piqué, before that first World Cup game, had played 90 minutes for Barcelona since April the 1st and 45 minutes for Spain in that time. And he just clearly couldn't fit yet. Now, obviously, with time, you can get that fitness. I don't know if he's got the time to get to it. And so there was a sense that he might have been left out first game. He wasn't, and he played poorly, and fitness-wise, he didn't quite look right, and he didn't quite look tuned in. So it wouldn't be a huge surprise if having Martinez played in this place.
All right, and what about in goal?
No, because... at the risk of making myself look very, very silly tomorrow if Casillas doesn't play, I would be amazed if Casillas...
Will you wear a dress on TV if he doesn't play? You're stalling, Sid.
It's a very bizarre gamble, but OK, I'll wear a dress on TV if
Casillas isn't right, OK.
You have to find a TV program that's stupid enough to want to show me wearing a dress.
Bidding rights ahoy. Pet rescue, says producer Ben.
Yeah. I think Del Bosque talked about Casillas as well as a captain after the first game, which obviously I suppose could be buffing him up to then drop him. But I just think that the impact of taking Casillas out would actually probably be quite disconcerting for the Spain team. I'm not sure it necessarily would gain very much. I think it would be seen as a punishment, and Del Bosque has been trying very hard to make sure people don't see any changes as punishments. I think the change of a goalkeeper is by definition much more dramatic than changing of an outfield player. So I don't see it happening. I'm not saying it definitely won't, but I would be very, very surprised, and I would be wearing a dress if it happens.
Sid Lowe, I'd be worried if I were him.
Me too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about Chile then? You're saying the Holland are a better side than they. They beat Australia 3-1, although it was a narrowish 3-1 by the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, with 10 minutes to go, it still like Australia could equalise, and they almost did. And then they got caught on the break. It was a very similar kind of end to the game as Croatia and Brazil, I thought, with Australia not perhaps getting what they deserve from the game.
Right.
But, how will Spain react? That's the big question, isn't it?
Well, it is. And also, is Vidal fit? Because when he went off in the Australia game, it seemed to make a big difference to Chile's performance. Is he any fitter this time? I've caught you unaware with that, haven't I?
The coach, Jorge Sampaoli, has sort of indicated that he could play. Vidal himself, I mean, when he went off against Australia, yeah, he lashed out, he kind of kicked a bottle, he was frustrated because he's just not been able to show the form that he did at Juventus until this knee injury. They're perhaps looking at ways where they can maybe play him in a different position where he's not having to cover so much ground and it can just maybe, I don't know, reserve energy and just play in the final third, which isn't really his game. He was saying, I think I don't know whether he was in the press conference today, but he was saying Chile are kind of a suicidal team in that they have this one way of playing. They just go at teams and they don't know any other way. And as Greg was saying, in that Australia game, there was a point where you thought, hang on a minute, Australia could get back into this. So whether they don't have that sort of game intelligence to see games out and just hold on to a lead, they just keep on going. But I mean, the coach was very bullish, saying about how they would really like to put Spain out and just end it for them. And they're setting themselves up to just induce mistakes, which I assume will be getting in their faces and pressing them and doing that sort of business. So
many football matches that I've seen over the years where the first 20 minutes seems to be pivotal to how it goes. And within that 20 minutes, if a team does score a goal and from these rapid attacks, they can go on to win it. If they don't, then it's almost like they've blown themselves out. And I think a lot of how Chile do against Spain might come down to whether they get an early goal and suddenly Spain defenders start seeing these horrific images of Dutch players in the minds. And they crumble.
Right, hallucinating again.
Yeah.
That's going to be fascinating. Are you on duty tomorrow, Greg?
I'm on childcare duty, so I'm not actually in work. I'm with my little one tomorrow. I'm back in on Thursday, you know, raring to go.
Cool. All right, James, you're back in tomorrow, aren't you?
I am.
Super stuff. Hopefully, listeners, you'll be with us as well. Till then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.